right now. This is a tape of Helena Preston on January 16th, 1978.
I was requested when this book came out, I could tell this later, but it doesn't matter. I was requested to speak before a youth group and review this book and talk about it. And in order to do that, I had to read the book. And so I read this book, but as a rule, I don't read many books. So I started to mention this in reference to the fact that I don't remember exactly when in May Lag BaOmer of 43 fell. But it is possible, as I say, that they were or were not killed that week or that month or whenever. So we came into the ghetto, and I started to say, that I didn't do any study, any research. I didn't make any research to find out when exactly that River Peltev was covered. When it was covered, the sewer system of Lemberg was built in such a way that all the sewers were flowing into the Peltev River, which was now underground, and only had the exits outside the cities. In other words, if you went outside the city, you could see the river going underneath or coming out. And so before the war, there were streets built over that river and houses built, and people lived there, and many people may not even have been aware that below flowed a river, except for the sewer workers, of course, and except perhaps for the people who lived on Peltevna Street. This, too, was the Jewish section. And as it happened in every city, as I believe I mentioned last time, the ghetto, as a rule, was built in the formerly habitated part of a city by the Jews. And so this is where the ghetto was built. Our barracks stood on Peltevna Street. And so when we arrived, we went straight to our barracks.
And this is what city?
This is Lvov, Lemberg, yeah. We went straight to our barracks. And there was already a lot of commotion because the few people who had been in the barracks, probably illegally, because as I told you before, this was not a ghetto anymore, it was now a Judenlager. And legally, all the people should have been out at work and then come back from work, so nobody should have been in the ghetto, but apparently some people were there. So, of course, they had seen what was going on, and they had anticipated something was going to happen, and they were worried that those of us who went out to work may not even make it back, that maybe they will take us directly from the places of work, or maybe they'll just gather us up right at the entrance to the ghetto. Anyway, we made it back to the barracks, and everybody was going wild, wondering what to do now, where to go. Some still had members of the family. Now, you recall I was telling you about Mr. Weiss, the man who called me into the basement, into the cellar when I escaped from Weisenhofer, and his mother, whom we called Babcia. Babcia in Polish means grandma. And Weiss's wife was still alive, Weiss's wife's sister, his teenage daughter. But as I recall now, I should double check that. Weiss's wife and sister and daughter decided, it seems to me, to leave the ghetto a few days or week before the liquidation. Or they came down to the sewer with us and decided to go back to the Arnofsky camp. I don't quite remember, but I remember that they were in the Arnofsky camp when we were already in the sewer. And so that, at any rate, to come back to the liquidation, night of the liquidation. So some people had somebody still. Or some of these people knew one another for a while because they lived either in the same barracks, or they were from Lemberg, or they knew them, each other from before the war or whatever. But I was still a total stranger, even though in those days it didn't take long to become familiar. In fact, close people became estranged, and people who never knew one another became close friends. It was a crazy world. I became close. This became my family, these people who had helped me after my escape from Weisenhofer. But my that moment, that very moment, and I'm thinking now about it, I want you to know one thing. I've spoken about the Holocaust so many times. I don't remember how many times. Some things always come out the same, verbatim, I discovered. Years ago, I didn't used to prepare my talks. Years ago, in the very first beginning, I used to prepare them and learn them by heart. I couldn't speak any English. If I got stuck with a word, I didn't know a synonym for it. So I used to write out, learn my speeches by heart. Years later, I just spoke extemporaneously. A few years ago, when they discovered I had high blood pressure, my doctor suggested that I better start writing out my speeches. It would be healthier for me. So I've begun to do that. But I really don't need to. So sometimes I say verbatim the same things, and other times, as I speak, there's some flashback of things that I hadn't thought about, I hadn't remembered for years, and something just comes to mind. So as I'm thinking now, I recall also, I mean, I have unlimited time now. Usually at a talk, you know, it's a half hour, an hour, but so I remember thinking, the very first thought was home. And this is interesting. Whenever a crisis arose, and I have said that in reference to the night before the liquidation, before the execution, you remember, or maybe I didn't say it this time, that you think back to your childhood or to home or, you know, but now I recall that moment, my thoughts went back home, to my parents, to my hometown. First of all, also maybe because subconsciously I realized this may be it, these are my last minutes, or maybe also thinking, what can I do now? And so I was thinking, here I am alone again, and I have to make my own decision now, and I cannot talk it over with anybody. And what shall I do? Shall I remain here and just perish in the barracks? Shall I run out into the street and get shot? Shall I run out into the street and let them load me onto a truck, and the trucks will go either to the Janowski concentration camp, extermination camp, or maybe the trucks will go directly to the sands and be executed there? Or shall I hide somewhere in the rubbles of the ghetto? Or shall I try and get on the truck and try jump off the truck in the Aryan section? But then I had known the Aryan section and how very little chance there was to live there even under normal circumstances, let alone now when the ghetto is burning. I was also quite familiar with attitudes of the local population. I keep referring to that because it's so tremendously important. I just had a discussion with someone this weekend, and this person said, but in fact my own son said, but why couldn't people run away? And it seemed that after having lived with my son for 23 years, I found myself telling him for the first time, but David, we were not just facing an enemy. Everybody was the enemy. There was the potential enemy and betrayer and executioner in every non-Jewish person. And so it was not just facing the German, and truly there were not millions upon millions of Germans. And in my hometown, there may have been only a dozen. But it was the local population that were our enemies as well. So that there was no chance, I felt, of jumping off a truck. I had no chance, absolutely, of being able to save myself in this strange city, if I couldn't do it even in my own hometown. And we lived in the mountains, in a mountainous area, but anybody could betray me.
But you did mention that some Polish people were helpful, your friends.
I will get to that. First of all, yes, you said my friend. That was important. Nobody knew who was a friend. I also told you the story about the mailman. I told you the story about the principal of my school. I told you the story of the prelate Kulakowski. I didn't tell you the story about the lady who used to live in our house, have an apartment there. One didn't know. On the other hand, this Mishko was not really a close personal friend before the war. And when he first offered his help, we were quite suspicious. And I told you the story about my father not trusting him. So one really didn't know who was a friend and who wasn't. And the true friends didn't come into my life until later. So no, there was not a chance. But of course, it was also a situation where we had nothing to lose. So as I was standing and debating what to do, I had made some friends. Even among Jews, you didn't know whom to trust and whom not to trust. Not necessarily, and I do want to emphasize, not because a Jew would betray another Jew for the sake of betraying him. I will, to the death, fight that notion and defend anybody who is labeled a collaborator of the Germans. I absolutely disagree with the notion that there were Jewish traitors or collaborators for the sake of collaborating. But again, as we were discussing it this past weekend with some people here, the subject of Hannah Arendt came up.
You better tell.
Well, Hannah Arendt is the social philosopher who a few years ago came forward with the theory that the Jews caused their own destruction. In other words, with their collaboration, phrase, such a beaten up, terrible, terrible phrase, which I despise, the Jews going to their deaths like lambs. With that, they caused their own destruction. I remember reacting violently to this theory then, and even more so now, that first of all, not having been there, she was absolutely unqualified to make any such statement, any kind of statement, concerning the reaction of a person under the Holocaust, and certainly such an outrageous, extremist kind of a statement. Hannah Arendt left Germany, according to my knowledge, before the war, and she certainly had no right to say it. Only we survivors have the right to say it. I know many people disagree with me, but I will defend this very strongly. So what happened was, about the Jewish people, if a Jewish person was not helpful, as we conceive being helpful under normal circumstances, the Boy Scout kind of being helpful, to help a lady across the street, to help the hungry, to help the poor, to clothe the naked, to feed the hungry. All these are good under normal circumstances, but it is very important to understand the entire atmosphere during the Holocaust to be able to judge the people. If anybody is from the perspective of time being labeled as a collaborator, it may have been because maybe it was a certain place.
I'm sorry.
So sometimes it may have been a case, and I'm sure you're familiar with that, that often the Germans would require a certain number. It didn't matter who, a number of people, 30 people, 100 people, 1,000 people, 5,000 people, and so it had to be this many people. And it may have been a choice between you or me. Now, I consider myself a fairly decent human being, but that when there is the choice between you or me, even now, I will say, I may have decided that I will save my life instead of your life. Do you understand? Now, this is not to say that they were not the Bahnhofers among the Christians, and that they were not saintly people like Janusz Korczak among the Jews, who were willing to go. And Janusz Korczak, incidentally, was the very famous saintly director of the orphanage who was scheduled to be saved, but he chose instead to go with his children to the train, and he perished with his charges. Yes, there were some such saintly people, but then the rest of us ordinary human beings are not made of this kind of stuff. So to come and say, for Hannah Arendt or others to say, first of all, that yes, they went to their death like sheep, and secondly, and I will dwell upon that a little more later, but primarily the fact that they may have been collaborators, Jewish collaborators I'm talking about now, or betrayers or so forth, is really a little too presumptuous. I may come back to this subject. I'm really hung up on it. So let's go back to the ghetto. So it all started out, and so this began a setting. We saw some fires through the windows. We heard some shots. We heard screams. The people running back and forth. I am in the room, people running in the corridors, running out of the rooms, into the corridors, afraid to run out in the street and so forth. A minute ago I was talking about my option, but I didn't mention one last option. When I escaped from Weisenhofer, and I was still illegally in this barracks, I don't know why they call it barracks and not barrack. Unless, is it a plural word that is a singular? It's what they call in Latin pluralia tantum, like scissors, right? I can't get used to calling it barracks. I always think barracks should be a plural. Okay, I'm here in this barracks, and while I was still hidden a few weeks ago, during one action, we went down into a basement, into a cellar, from which there was a false door into a little room, from which there was apparently an entrance to a shelter, about which I wasn't told. There were rumors among us, just a few people who were living there, that yes, there are some people here in this barracks who have a shelter, but who they were or what or how, I was not told at the time. Now, Jakub, the same hunchback who came over to me, who brought me food while I was lying in the shelter, Babcia sent the food with him. He comes over and he says, Halina, come with us. I said, where are we going? He says, we'll try to get into the sewer. So I didn't know much about the sewer, but it sounded like heaven. So it sounded marvelous. And I was a very fortunate person because I was alone. It's interesting, a minute ago I said I was very unfortunate because I was alone, and I was very, very lonely, and I had no one to talk anything over with. Where shall I go? What shall I do? And yet I was fortunate that I was alone. I didn't have to care for an elderly mother, a child, a brother, a separation, somebody else getting killed or hurt. It was just me. So on the one sense, that was a curse. On the other sense, that was a blessing. I never thought about it this way. I've never expressed that before. I never did. But I remember thinking about it. Because Weiss had to think about Babcia, and other people had still may have had somebody. So we went down into the basement.
Were you in danger of being taken away?
Oh, yes, immediately. It was a matter of minutes. It was a matter of minutes now. They were yes, because, I mean, they had not yet knocked on our door. Oh, yes, any time. They were all over. And so, of course, already people had taken cyanide, and many people did have cyanide on them, because a lot of people, in fact, this was one thing my parents did not want me to have, and I had asked Mishko many times to procure me for me some, but he said these were the orders my parents had given him, that under no circumstances should he get any for me. So I didn't have any, but some people did, and they had already begun taking cyanide.
There were rumors, were there not, that you were going to another work camp? There were some people who felt that they were going to a better place. Did everyone know they were going to their death at this point?
And no, not that we were going to our death, but we knew at this point that Lemberg, Lvov, being the big city that it was, the big metropolis, that from Lemberg we could only go to one place, and that would be to the sands, which was on the outskirts of Lemberg, or perhaps to the Yanovsky camp for a little longer period, in case they can't handle all the people, or in case there happens to be a resistance. I'm trying to remember exactly how much we knew about the resistance in the Warsaw ghetto. I remember knowing something, because while I was in Lemberg, and as I said, and life was so difficult, and now I'm getting hot, please. I remember thinking that maybe I should go to Warsaw. And then we had heard some rumors that something was happening in Warsaw. Some people said, but in those days there were so many rumors, either we were going to be liberated the next day or we were going to be killed the next day. And everybody always preferred to hang on to the happy rumors rather than the sad ones. So,
what year was this, excuse me?
To Warsaw. Warsaw was capital city.
What year was this?
At the same time. I'm talking now still about the liquidation night. So before the liquidation, that I was considering going to Warsaw. So we knew that we were not going to be taken anywhere to work. We knew that it was the liquidation. We had seen what had happened to all the other people. So at this point, there was no more, we just knew it all. So we are going down, and from the basement, from that cellar, there's a door to a little, like a pantry you would call it, I don't know what door, but of course near the cellar. And then from there, we see an opening, and I'm told that we are gonna go through this opening. And I said, well, how far are we from the sewer? And Jakob says to me, well, it's not too far. We'll go through this opening, then we'll go through some pipes, and then we'll go through some other pipes. And eventually, once we get down, we'll go down to the Peltiv. So they explained to me what the Peltiv was and so forth. And we couldn't think any further time-wise than just getting down. Where down, for how long, didn't matter. Just to get down so as not to get the bullet in the back immediately. So somebody pushed me into that pipe, and I crawled in, and someone had gone ahead of me, so somebody pulled me out on the other side, on the other end of the pipe, and then we got onto something like stones, then we heard some water trickling, and then we went like down a pipe, then we came onto a pipe where the water was coming down real strong, we were sort of flowing down like with that water, and some more pipes. I don't remember for how long we were going through pipes until finally we heard something that sounded like a river. And by the time I set foot there, which I assumed were in the Peltev, and I stepped out, I looked around and there were a lot of people. And it looked as follows. There was the river in the center and two like sidewalks. It was very much like, you know, when I go through the tunnel, going to New York, the Holland Tunnel or the other tunnel, where the car is in the center and there are two sidewalks on both sides, except not that fancy and not that paved and not that light and not that clean and not that safe and not that anything.
Or not that large.
And not that large. But there it was, the river in the middle and a very narrow, narrow path on the sides, which must have been the narrow paths were for the sewer workers. Because, as I said, the sewer system was flowing into the river. So some people were holding flashlights, some candles, and by the light of those, we could see, of course, it was the middle of the night by now, by the light of those, I could see all kinds of people, some little people, must have been children, standing, leaning against the wall, and every now and then you'd hear a splash because somebody would just slip into the water, and some people just jumped into the water wanting to drown. Or some people, you see, two people couldn't walk on that sidewalk, so some people maybe thought that they could swim along that river and then swim out on the outskirts of the city and then run away or whatever and save themselves. But whatever thoughts entered whose ever mind, there we were. I don't know how long. Then I discovered that I had separated from Jakub and from all the other people who had come down from our barracks, and I just saw a lot of people. I don't know how many. After a while, we heard somebody coming down and saying the ghetto is all aflame. It is the liquidation, and that this is it. And so, what does one do next? At that point, a little later, I heard somebody calling my name, very softly, of course, and it was Jakub again. He was calling me, and he said, "Follow me." So as I was holding on to him, and very, very carefully holding on to the wall and among the people, I don't know how I made it, I followed Jakub back. And then he pulled me into a side tunnel and he said to me, "You come with me, our sewer workers are here, and just come with me." So he took me in there, and there I saw a few people, and two people who looked like sewer workers. They were wearing those high boots, and I was told that they had agreed to save 20 people. By that meant that they will take us away from the Peltev into some other spot within the sewer system, and they will bring us whatever is necessary. So,
who is they? Who is they? They agreed.
I didn't say who is they because I didn't know myself yet who is they. So I just said they, the sewer workers. It turned out that, so first I want to finish that statement that they agreed to 20, and I was the 21st. So 21 people of us remained. The day were two sewer workers who were two out of three. A man by the name of Ignaz Higger. He was known as Ijo Higger, who lived with his wife Peppa. And
do you want to spell his name?
Yes, C-H-I-G-I-E-R. That was his original name. Higger, his wife Peppa, and two children, a girl aged 7 and a boy aged 4, had contacted some contact with a sewer worker first in the ghetto. This two sewer workers, maybe more, but these two used to come to the ghetto to service the sewers. And since our barracks were on the Poltavna Street, this Higger, who was a local man, came up with ideas, may have come up, as other people may have come up too, that it could be possible to knock out an opening through the concrete of the sewer pipes, between the sewer pipes that led to the Peltav River and the basement of the barracks, and in case of an action or during the liquidation, escape into the sewers. Neither he nor this one or two sewer workers nor anybody could think of anything more than the maximum salvation to just escape from an action or during the liquidation for the duration of that action. This Higger also in the ghetto became acquainted with a hunchback by the name of Jakub Berestitsky. Jakub Berestitsky was a poor, illiterate, I think, boy from the city of Lodz, which was called in German Litzmannstadt. But the Germans entered Lodz, which was between Warsaw and Lemberg, north of Lemberg. They entered that city before they entered Lemberg. So he, like many other Jews, escaped from Lodz to Lemberg. Somehow he came to Lemberg. I don't exactly know when. And he was in the Lemberg ghetto. And there, because the Germans didn't need a tailor at the time, they needed a locksmith. He said he's a locksmith. And so he became a locksmith in the ghetto. And as such, he at one point met this Mr. Higger. Higger discovered he's a very capable boy and would be a good idea, you know, to know him. And he told him the story about this sewer worker, or maybe Jakub contacted the sewer worker independently. I don't know how it happened, but those three, Higger, Jakub Berestitsky, and the sewer worker, sometime before the liquidation, decided on knocking down, making that hole. By the time I escaped from Weisenhofer and they offered me shelter, they already had that place in mind, that should I need to be sheltered, not Higger, I didn't know Higger at the time, but Jakub and Mr. Weiss and the Babcia, the grandmother, they knew that should they need to shelter me, they would. Now, I'm telling this story because it may have been a rare case where somebody who had their own problems was concerned about saving a girl whom they didn't know from Adam, who had just escaped from Weisenhofer. There may have been many such cases, maybe only one. But for every betrayal or collaborator of whom people like to talk a lot. There were many, many more who were willing to help and rescue others, among Jews and non-Jews as well. When it comes to rescuing people, the humanitarian was a humanitarian, whether he was Jewish, Christian, Hindu, or whatever he was. That didn't matter. I will from now on speak of the soul workers by their names. The conceiver of the idea, not the conceiver, the conceiver may have been Higa, but the man willing to go along with this idea was a soul worker by the name of Leopold Socha, or in Polish Leopold Socha, or as they called him, Poldek.
Would you spell his name?
I will spell his name, but I will not talk about him now, because if I'll start talking about him now, I would like never to finish.
No, but I only for the
yes.
Transcript.
His S-O-C-H-A. And I also will not tell you who he was or the kind of person he was, because first I'll tell you what he did, and then I'll tell you who he was. So this Socha came down into the sewer. He had heard, apparently he had no business being in the sewers at night, but apparently he must have heard when he was in the Aryan section that this is the liquidation, the ghetto is surrounded, the ghetto is burning. And so this is the time for him to get into the sewers and get through this via the sewers into the barracks where we were, possibly to save us, or if not us, anybody. Just to save some Jews. And as it happened, by the time he came into the barracks, we had already gotten into the sewers, so he was going through the sewers looking for Chigir or Jacob. He found them, and then Jacob decided he wanted to save me too, and Socha had also heard about me, of course, Mr. Weiss, and they were going, and the Babcia, they were going to save me too, they're going to find me too. So 21 of us remained. He said to us, he took us, he said, follow me. And they took us into a pipe, into some pipe away from the river, from the Peltav River. And there we went. It was so terribly cold and wet. And we were, of course, drenched. We were totally wet. As we were talking here with Mrs. Higger this past weekend, it was a miracle that we didn't just die there. But nobody complained. Nobody said, I'm cold, I'm tired, I'm sleepy. I mean, you just didn't talk these things. And so we remained. Among the 21 of us was the Higer family, father, mother, and the two children. There was a barber from Lemberg, from Lvov, a local man by the name of Mundek Margolius. A girl by the name of Clara, I don't remember her last name now, because then she married Mundek. So it was just always Mundek and Clara. So that makes four Higgers. Clara is five, Mundek is six, Mr. Weiss is seven, his mother is eight. There was a couple by the name of Weinberg. Not Haskell. I don't remember his first name. There was a Mr. and Mrs. Weinberg, and Mrs. Weinberg was pregnant. She was in her sixth month of pregnancy. So that makes what? Where am I there? Eight or ten?
It's
10. Then there were, Mr. Weinberg was also from Lodz, but they didn't know each other. Jacob and Weinberg didn't know each other in Lodz. The woman came, and I want to mention the name. She came from the city, the pregnant woman, his wife, came from the city of między rzeczy in Polish, and in Yiddish it was mizrich. And the reason I'm mentioning it is because there was a very famous tzaddik, a famous rabbi, the mizrich rabbi. Then there were two more men from the city of Lodz who were friends of Mr. Weinberg. The name of one man was Haskell, and his brother's name I have forgotten. And I'll later explain why. Perhaps I'm thinking now why I've forgotten these names. That may be the reason, subconscious. Okay, so that is 12. There was a doctor, and I think his name is mentioned in Leon's book, but I don't remember the name now. There was a lawyer whose name I have forgotten. There was there were three beautiful young girls from Lemberg whom I didn't know before. But they came down somehow. Apparently they saw us coming and they followed. I don't know, but they were with us. There were, that makes 15. Am I right? Now who were the other? And I, that is 16, so five more. I don't remember now who the five more were. I'll get to it. It'll come back. So we remained. Our sewer workers said that they are going to come back tomorrow. They'll bring us food and they'll bring us some dry clothing. But in the meantime, not to budge from here and just to trust them. And we had no alternative anyway, so there we remained. The next day, they came back as promised. They brought us food. They brought us dry clothes. And they brought us news from the ghetto. The ghetto was still burning. There were bodies all over the place. Whoever tried to run away was caught. And that the people, and that they made an estimate that there were approximately 200 people in the Peltov the night of the liquidation. But by now, there are very few left there. Some of them just walked out, some drowned, and some remained. However, that there were a lot of bodies found on the outskirts of the city where the Peltov was coming out, some who were walking out and were caught and shot by the Ukrainians, Poles, or Germans, whoever caught them. The bodies that drowned in the Peltov just came out with the water to the outskirts of the city. And many of the bodies, they told us, were stripped of their clothing and so forth, which indicated that some of these people may have tried to escape but were killed by the local population, who felt that maybe these people had something on them, either money or a watch or whatever, and Jewish lives were very cheap. There was no price on them at all, except dead. Of course, if you could deliver a Jew alive, you were remunerated by the police for that, but otherwise you could remunerate yourself by just, even if it was only a matter of getting the clothing or take the boots of a Jew, it was worth killing him. I'm using now, I hope you notice, the language of the day. I'm, of course, being very truthful and sarcastic, but such was the order of the day. And such was the mentality. So that was the second day. The third day, likewise, they came down and brought us this and that. They told us we had not slept, of course, and we had no place to sit, and neither could we stand up. They told us that there is a sewer somewhere, a pipe rather, where there are some boards. Now, the boards may have been there, God knows, years or hundreds of years or whatever. They are wet. But that if we went and got them, and in some other place we can find some stones, we can put the stones in the water, in the pipe, put the boards on the stones, so that we could lie down, and that after a while the warmth of our bodies will dry out the boards, so that eventually we will have beds. and these boards will be our beds. So this we did.
That night that you spent in this first night before you had dry clothes and food, you just spent standing up.
Not standing up. We could never stand up. We were crawling. Yeah, just like that. Right, right. No, no. I mean, who wants to lie down in the water in the first place? No, just like that. So we got those boards and we lay down. Little by little, we got used to the routine. After a few days, of course, the ghetto had been liquidated, and now the idea was what's going to happen from now on. The girls decided soon after, and I don't remember exactly how soon, I really should reread, if nothing else, at least the article which was published about us immediately after liberation, when the Russian German,